Ruby Ryder's Pegging Paradise podcast number 21 on November 4th, 2012. Last week, my rant about playing hard to get and the women that do that whole rant got some of you going, and I got some great responses and feedback. So I'm going to read you a few of them. Here's the first one. The hard-to-get game, I believe to be a legacy idea. I'm a very straightforward type of guy, and if a girl says no or that she's not interested, I take that at face value and get on with whatever it is that I'm doing. It does seem that guys expect girls to play hard to get, so then not accepting no for an answer is the standard response. On the flip side, back to the legacy thing, we can all be guilty of it to enhance flirting, normally when both parties have shown interest in one another. Hard to get, it is a stupid concept when used by women when they are interested, but the female mind is one of the world's biggest enigmas. I use the term legacy in reference to how times change, and it's not really used in its what I like to think is its true form, to help entice one another and heighten the want for the end result. Not like nowadays, because it says so in a magazine. Yes, wonderful points, especially the legacy part. Here's the next one. I'm going to comment on some of these as I go, and then some comments at the end. Here's my next one. Playing hard to get. I personally think that it is a cover of insecurity for some men and women who don't want to be exposed, burned, rejected, whatever. I've never exactly understood the fear, since it is a bit irrational to assume that every person will be attracted to one another. Your points about rape culture are spot on. I would offer that I've always thought if a woman says no or acts disinterested that I would step back and play the hard-to-get role. If she wants to pursue me, then she will, but she should appreciate the fact that I did try initially and she did say no. It is a sign of respect when a woman says no. A man who pushes on because, quote, he read it on the internet, unquote, or women who say no mean yes, have read too much Literotica, Reddit, or whatever other site men or women use to openly express their fantasies. In general, women aren't afraid to say what they mean. This isn't Little House on the Prairie. Women are more empowered today. It could be a generational thing, but I think playing hard to get is harmless if it is in a flirtatious way where she never says no, but just keeps enticing you to pursue a little bit more. Once the word no comes out of her mouth, it ends. However, until that point, she is simply feeling you out or enjoying the fact that somebody is that fascinated with her. I am no different. I think that might be, quote, courtship, end quote, or a better word, post-18th century. Finally, the term slut is highly arousing when it is being used during the peak of passion. I'm sorry, did I type that out loud? Ruby, great points, but remember, you were responding to a Reddit question about how to interpret a one-night stand when a woman says no. That is extremely tricky, as people are only looking for sex and not considering other aspects of that person. What I describe above is more of a dating, no strings attached, friends with benefits type of relationship. One-night stands for me in the past have involved women who are clear that a hookup is on the table, that a hookup with me is on the table, and that we should be hooking up now on the table. I love that. And I agree, slut can be highly arousing. So can cunt or bitch. Positive expressions of those words can be hot with a capital H. Okay, here's my next comment. I like this, the way this one starts. I have to admit that while I was listening to the first few minutes of this week's podcast, I found myself to be a little bit irritated by your view on the game of playing hard to get, since I automatically associated what Sprezzatura, which is the first comment I read, has characterized as more of a flirtatious teasing with the term. Of course, I entirely agree with your assessment of it being potentially dangerous in the context of a situation where the sincerity of a no means no might be questioned by the male-turned-possible rapist. It is a slippery slope, for sure. But at the same time, I wouldn't want all those cheeky, innuendo-filled conversations in bars, clubs, etc. to end. I believe there is some middle ground to be found under a lot of insecurities here, and we do not have to resort to a strict separation between subtlety and safety. First of all, irony tends to get lost in the written word. When a sentence is spoken by a person, the meaning of that very sentence can be turned into something completely different by the smallest facial expression or a slight shift in tone. There are countless ways in which a no might be rightfully understood as a yes. However, a person walking that thin line should always be aware as to when the tide starts to turn. And I suppose this especially applies to women. Sadly, there is a chance that a lot of men are going to misunderstand such behavior and react poorly, at which point it is vital that the woman is made sure of not running out of words to be clear about her true intentions. Also, I'm sure a climate of no might mean no, but it might also mean yes, or whatever, leads to more than a few problems in our society, starting with the most simple conversation. There is some underlying sexism at work here, I am sure, and the fact that I am arguing for a more, for lack of a better word, subtle approach to talking about hooking up could be considered out of line, while in more conservative areas, the very absence of this lucidity is the problem. But consider a setting that is dear to all of our hearts, wherein a woman and a man meet in a bar, and by some twisted logic, they start to talk about pegging. Now, as a man, I am in that position of choosing whether or not I want to be clear about my intentions here. In my mind, it would be much more enticing to play hard to get, to have the woman almost give up in frustration, just to finally succumb to her wishes and be fucked, no, be ravished by her, and feel the power of all that tension I created in her. So in conclusion, I want to say let's always be aware of the danger, but at the same time, let's not forget the fun we have playing with fire. Nice metaphor there, by the way. P.S. Should all of this indeed come across as too peculiar, please disregard my statement, as I am writing to you from that equally peculiar place called Europe. Okay. First responding to this last comment, I found your hypothetical scenario really interesting because the way that you reverse the positions to where you're the one playing hard to get is appealing to you, I think, because of the very reasons pegging appeals to many men, and that's the ability to let go and be taken, which is most men are very unfamiliar with. It's novel and sexy and delicious for a man to feel that. But as a woman in that situation, we're pretty familiar with being taken, and the thing is, it can also be dangerous for women. I'm quite sure there are women who enjoy creating that kind of tension, and they enjoy being taken as well. But I'm thinking it's not usually with a hookup sort of situation because the trust isn't there. But I don't know. You know, I have to fully admit to my own bias here as a woman who prefers to play the dominant role rather than the submissive one. I, in particular, need a lot of trust and familiarity to allow a man to ravish me. Now, there are surely women out there who would love to be ravished in a hookup scenario by a guy that they just met. I guess I just see too many ways that that can go wrong because men are stronger. So if a woman ravishes you and things take a wrong turn, you can get out of the situation because you're likely to be stronger than pretty much any woman you're with. We don't have that choice if the man really decides he wants what he wants. So what might seem like an overabundance of caution to you is not without reason coming from a woman's perspective. However, having said all of that, I love flirtatious teasing and would not like to see that disappear. Mostly I love to do it with an established partner, because then the rules are kind of known, but the game is still played. But I'm hearing, you know, pretty much unanimously from you guys that there are definitely enjoyable aspects of the playing hard to get game that you don't want to see disappear altogether, that a certain level of playful back and forth makes the entire exchange quite fun and more exciting. So I'm thinking, out loud, perhaps the key here should be, as some of you echoed, the actual use of the word no really means no. Maybe that's part of how all this can, you know, end up coming together and still, you know, playing with the fire, enjoying it, and doing that old courtship thing that is so pleasurable, and yet not having it turn into the no means yes disasters that could be perpetuated by something of that type. Okay, now I'm going to talk a bit more about politics. I told you I wasn't going to, right? But check this out. So regarding my promise on podcast 19 about leaving all politics besides sex-related politics off my website. So my friend who inspired that promise wrote to me after listening to it, and I want to read you part of his response. It has been over a week since I got the reply from you to my request asking you to remove my political graffiti, asking me to listen to the latest podcast because I inspired something. The reason it has taken me so long to get back to you about this is because I have listened to podcast number 19 over and over, trying to figure out whether something bad has occurred here or not. I am very glad that you're going to continue posting and discussing on sex-related political topics. I find it interesting not to just hear about the topic, but also your personal thoughts on the topic. However, I now feel that I am the one responsible for shutting out a portion of Ruby Rider to all of your listeners and readers. I like politics, Ruby, and while I think I can understand why she feels that only sex politics is applicable in this arena, I would like to remind her of what she said about teachers in the early part of that podcast. Just as it would be nice not to have to think of teachers as sexless or genderless, I don't want to think of Ruby as apolitical for anything other than sex politics, at least not the Ruby I've come to know so far. I think the point I'm trying to make here is that even though I saw that comment on that day, in that context, as a stain on your site, I would not see a post from you, any post, on your own site in the same way. I wish you didn't make that promise in the podcast, as I'd be interested in hearing from every part of Ruby. But it's your site, and just as I respect your right to include anything you want, I also respect your right to exclude that which you don't want. I just feel weird in having been the one who inspired you to do what I think is possibly a bad thing, and that is to self-censor. Wow, thank you for your deep thinking and honest reflections about all this. I mean, that's a lovely offering that you sent. I appreciate you're not wanting to censor me or to have inspired self-censorship. And I also really enjoy your desire to experience the uncensored me. And I'm happy to tell you that the politically uncensored Ruby is alive and well on Facebook and Twitter. Often, as a matter of fact, I post whatever I want there and don't think a thing about it. With the election coming up, though, and just the general tone of politics in this country, everything has become pretty distastefully contentious, is the best way that I can express it. I mean, Ira Glass just did a piece on this type of stuff on This American Life, and I'm going to post the link to this episode of This American Life that he did. And I think the increase in, like, the campaign intensity, the hyperbole, and the political messages that are completely motivated by fear as opposed to accuracy, I think those things have a lot to do with the widening of the gap between the political points of view and, unfortunately, the resulting animosity between people when they think differently, and also the resulting refusal to have any kind of polite discussion about it. And this is a very real phenomenon in our country. It's very strange and unfortunate. So the reason I wanted to take politics out of the equation is so that no matter what political views you have, my messages about the joys of pegging will not be lost. You know, that's another reason I don't talk at length about my love of riding crops or wooden paddles or restraints, even though I do talk occasionally about them, and some of you who have read my erotica know that part of me a little better. It's because I don't want to alienate the people who have had, for example, fairly conservative sex lives until finding out about pegging and finding me. If the first thing a very politically leaning whichever way person encounters is a frustrated rant from me about a political candidate, or a very conservative history sexual couple, the very first thing they encounter is me waxing poetic about how it feels good to swing that riding crop through the air, feel it connect with his ass, and watch him flinch. Well, you can do the math. I mean, I'm doing my best to present pegging in a palatable manner, I guess, for the majority of sexually adventuresome people out there in the world. And am I censoring myself a little bit because I want the message to go a little further? Yeah, absolutely I am. There are other forums where I talk about more about stuff like that. On FetLife, I talk more about the BDSM part of me. And politically, yeah, you can absolutely find that on Twitter and Facebook. So finally, I would now like to encourage all of you, no matter what you do, to vote. Ideally, get out there and vote for all the candidates that will not try to take away your sexual freedoms. They won't try and take away access to accurate sex education, your access to birth control, the right to choose what happens to your own body. Because if they come for your birth control, believe me, the dildos will be next, people. Think about it. That would be cataclysmically disastrous for all of us here at Pegging Paradise. Vote. That's my message at the end of that one. Okay, now I have a success story for you. We love these. Okay. Hi there, Ruby, and all avid readers. Oh, first I must mention that this is a letter that got written to me on a group I have through the tribes. It's called Pegging 101. And this is a completely non-BDSM group that is for the more conservative people. Hi there, Ruby, and all avid readers. I wanted to write and tell you a little bit about myself, my wife, and our pegging adventures, as you have played a bigger role than you can know in our explorations. Fair warning, I'm going to ramble a bit, as I tend to when I get excited about something. First, a little bit about us. We're in our young 30s, married for 3 years, together for 5. Our sexual relationships before being together were relatively typical / vanilla. Before we started dating, I had been playing with my buttonhole for a while, parentheses years, with fingers, probes, plugs, and dildos, without having brought it into the bedroom with previous lovers. About a month into dating my now wife, when we first started having sex, she somewhat bashfully took out her, parentheses, impressive collection of sex toys. I love the vulnerability a person has to face when introducing the most intimate parts of their life to a girlfriend or boyfriend. Shortly after that revelation, we were at my apartment, and knowing I wanted to be fully open about my desires in our relationship, I built up the courage to make a revelation of my own. I brought down my box of toys, slightly timidly told that I enjoyed, no, really loved, being on the receiving end of anal play. She blanched only slightly at the biggest of my toys, a realistic 10-inch dong 6 inches around. You might say one of those impulse buys where my eyes were bigger than my ass, though I've worked my way up to really enjoying it. So this brings me to my first suggestion for those hoping to find a partner open to pegging. If you enjoy having your ass played with, you've got to be honest and let your partner know. The earlier in the sexual relationship, the better. If you're worried they'll react with disgust or anger, I'm afraid to tell you you're probably already on the wrong path. Now, for honesty's sake, she had plenty of questions and concerns, especially the all too common, "You're not gay, are you?" questions. After assuaging her concerns, our relationship continued on its merry, sexual, escapade-y way, leaving my toys in the box for the most part. As our relationship continued for a year or more, we started incorporating fingers, wands, probes, and the like into our bedroom play. This brings me to my second suggestion for finding your true love and partner in pegging adventures. I have had previous girlfriends, and with my wife, girlfriend at the time, in particular, that have had a very cute habit when finding me at the counter in the kitchen, picking something up or some other compromising position, of grabbing my hips and thrusting against my ass from behind. Maybe an unconscious fantasy of role reversal? I only mention this as a suggestion to keep an eye open, for as I've had multiple partners that would do this, and it is hot in and of itself. So after having dated for a couple of years, I reached a point where I felt secure enough in our relationship to make myself very vulnerable again and tell her that what I really fantasized about was her strapping on a dildo and entering me and fucking my ass so tenderly. Let's just say it didn't go over great the first time talking about it. She had concerns about not whether I was gay, but about having a tool/image between her legs that didn't coincide with her view of herself, and also the misconception that my interest in strap-on play involved BDSM, dominatrix, gaping assholes, and forced feminization, all things that people stereotype with strap-on play from porn they've seen. After some hurt feelings on my part and looking around on the internet for a source about pegging with more eloquence than I can express myself, I found, drum roll please, this tribe and your other site, Pegging Paradise. So, my wife hadn't discounted the possibility of ever pegging. She was certainly not sold in on the idea at that point, though, and I asked her to just browse your sites. Ruby, thank you, thank you, thank you. After she saw your sites and the fact that you have managed to address any of her concerns in an intelligent and thoughtful way, she couldn't have been any more eager to please and peg and take me wholly. We bought an outlaw leather Anio harness and share dildo. We love the harness, though we want to try a Nexus Senior, since the bean on the share is too large to be comfortable for her. But the other end makes us both squirt. That first unforgettable night, I helped her fit the harness with the dildo in place, and melted. I've got a picture of her I look at constantly, wearing just this, with her perfect tits, perky as ever, a sultry smile, and a single finger wagging as if to say, if this ever gets onto the internet. She teased my buttonhole with her fingers and then a probe, slowly and then faster to the largest bulge. After a bit of this, she pushed me back onto the bed on my back, spread my legs, and pressed the head of her dildo against my relaxed ass. She heard my breath catch, and I felt my eyes go doughy, as I've got long-lashed dark brown eyes. As she looked down at my teased hole, she presses gently into me, and we both gasped when she slid the head into my ass. My eyes lost focus, and I pulled her down to and into me, moaning as she slid the dildo all the way in while I held her against me. I love that I've never felt closer to someone as I did then. She started sliding the dildo in and out while making me see God, quote unquote. I had never moaned so much like a woman often will until that night. When she made me come, I had an orgasm like she had only been able to describe before, intense to the point of being hallucinatory and an electric current running through the course of my whole body. Just last night, she bent me over and fucked my ass from behind. She has such a natural, perfect rhythm of thrusting, which I think must be her new favorite position. But my favorite will always be looking into her eyes, me all doughy-eyed, my body nothing more than goo holding her body close to mine, me pulling her hips against me, and her sliding her dildo in and out of me. Just as a body-shaking orgasm made me squirt, the bean from her end made her come and squirt on the harness where I felt it on my skin. Ruby, thank you 1,000 times over. Because of your eloquence and intelligence in addressing how normal couples are fulfilling fantasies of pegging, my wife and I have found pleasures we are so grateful to share. Now my wife instigates our strap-on play as often as I do, and I get spoiled and thoroughly pleased once or twice a week. I'm thinking round two tonight. This was such a delight to find. My goodness. And actually, part of it reads like erotica. I'm like, you know, fanning my face here. Yeah, that was pretty hot. Very wonderful description. One of the things I wanted to comment on was initially when she understood that you wanted her to peg you with a strap on, she had the reaction that a fair amount of women do. It's hard for them to reconcile putting those two things together, their idea of their own femininity and then strapping on a cock. And for some women, that is really quite a psychological barrier. There are even discussions about it. Like there was one on Reddit where, or maybe it was FetLife, I can't remember at this point, talking about how that was her biggest difficulty with thinking about pegging, was because she felt it would like totally ruin her femininity. And there were lots of wonderful suggestions about, well, there's all kinds of lovely, feminine, totally sexy outfits to dress in that have to do with pegging, or that even include it. I mean, Spare Parts Harnesses has the most beautiful new harness that's got garters that can attach to thigh highs. It's just so feminine. So, I mean, that's one of the things. But also, there were some wonderful suggestions, which I would absolutely echo, to tell your woman, if this is your situation, how incredible she looks, how sexy she looks, how it just turns you on like crazy. Because that is something I never went through. I was kind of surprised to find that women go through this whole freaking out about I don't want to strap on a cock thing. I don't know why I didn't have any issue with it, but I just didn't. So that was news to me. And yes, you are absolutely an example of this is what happens sometimes. But the end of the story, wow, that is so, so wonderful. And I'm so happy for you. And sir, I must commend you on your patience. Goodness sakes, 2 years. I think I read that right. It took you actually 2 years to get to that point. So I think a lot of our readers would like it to happen a whole lot more quickly. And there is some in-between time there that would be perfect for every relationship, I'm sure. Okay. I wanted to tell you readers now, or listeners, that I am taking the NaNoWriMo Challenge, National Novel Writing Month. Basically, the challenge is to write 50,000 words in 1 month. That happens every single November. I've had some writer friends who I've known to do this every single November for years, and so I'm finally jumping into the fray. And really all that's required is you go there to their website and sign up and register, and then you update your word count every day. It's interesting because the challenge for me is to find the time to crank out content and not edit it, which is kind of what you have to do. You have to average about 1,700 words a day. And if you let your inner editor edit while you write, you'll never get there, especially if you have a life to live aside from writing. And so not editing, which is what eats up a lot of time, yeah, you can crank out that much content. But what I end up with is a lot of unedited content and not much time to edit it. But I still aim to keep up with the blog posts and the podcast and the stories, not to mention the rest of my life. So it's a challenge indeed, but it's one I totally intend to conquer and experience and succeed at and, in the end, relish. Absolutely. So I believe you can actually do a public search. You maybe only can do it if you're a part of NaNoWriMo, and that is NaNoWriMo. I'll put a link for it underneath the blog posting for this podcast. But you can do a public search and actually look at my stats, and I posted a link for that on my Facebook page. So if you're interested in where I am, you want to cheer me on, you want to send me some ideas on what to write about, it's all welcome. Okay. I'm going to ask this question again because I got one answer for it, but I'd love to encourage a little bit more feedback, and I think I'm going to post this question in more places. I'm really interested in feedback from my experienced pegging couples. Or people who, even if you're not in a partnership now, that you've done a fair amount of pegging with a partner in the past. So you're familiar with the different kinds of equipment, and you've used both the double enders and the flare-based dildos. My question is, do you think doubles are a good choice for beginners? I would love to hear some feedback from you, and hopefully I'll have enough input to talk a little bit more about that next week. You can leave your answers on the blog, or you can mail them to me privately, ruby@peggingparadise.com. And then you can also follow me on Twitter @ruby_writer, where there's lots of politics. You can check out my Facebook profile and my Facebook page. There's a lot of politics there too. You can subscribe to my blog, which will only have sexual politics. That sounds dirty in a really fun way. I don't know. I picture suits and ties. And my podcast, as many of you are already aware, is now accessible on iTunes as well as on my blog. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. It's been a pleasure. Happy pegging, everyone.